Getting now deep into Hilchot Deot. This is our third, I think, session. And we're in, we discussed the Koteret, we discussed the title and the 11 mitzvot of Hilchot Deot, and we talked about the purpose of Hilchot Deot as character development, that the Rambam actually has a halachic recipe for helping me to become a better human being. And Shkoyach. And now we're going to get into Halach Aleph. At the end of yesterday, we said that the Rambam says, if you look in Halach Aleph, Deot are be'esh l'kol echad v'echad mibnei adam, and he's talking to humanity in general. There are many different deot, different character traits. And zu mishunem zu v'rechokam v'meni biyoter. And different character traits are just that. They're very different. And it is most probable that there are certain character traits that you really don't have to work on. Not that there's any character trait that you don't need some work on. But generally, if you can't name to yourself the one, two, or three things that you know you really need to work on, then you already need to work on just knowing what you need to work on, which is not a small issue in and of itself, right? And there are some things that, yeah, if you can't name, if you can't identify, if you're not aware of the one, two, or three things that you think you really need to work on, then you need to work on knowing what you need to work on. In other words, there's someone sitting here whose biggest issue is laziness. Don't know who it is. But there is someone statistically sitting here whose biggest issue is laziness, right? And there's someone sitting here for whom laziness is just not an issue. That's not his issue. Not that all of us at some point don't have to work on it, but that's not his issue. But maybe that person for whom laziness is not an issue, he's got to deal with anger. Or he's got to deal with ego, with pride. Or he's got to deal with stinginess, right? And the Rambam is going to go through the different midot. So let's talk about this. Yesh adam shu bal chema koes tamid. There's someone who is bal chema. What is the word chema, which means anger, remind you of? Pardon? Nope. Cham, heat. There's a fire to anger. We're not going to get to that right now, but there's a reason that when the Gemara talks about anger and the Torah, this is a word from the Torah, right? Chema. Anger is fire. Why do you think anger is fire? Why isn't anger water? Why isn't anger wind? I could say that anger is like a storm that blows. Pardon? Fire is destruction. Fire spreads. If you think about it, remember we were talking about this week the fact that there are different approaches to mitzvot. So whenever Chazal, whenever the rabbis choose something which by definition is a symbol, you always got to take a moment to stop and think about that symbol. I'll give you an example. Candle lighting. Candle lighting is probably one of the most underappreciated pieces of Jewish tradition. It's not a mitzvah d'oraisa, although you're fulfilling a mitzvah d'oraisa when you do it. It's not biblical. And how it came about, the Ramah talks about, has to do with shalom bayit, that creating a certain atmosphere in the home, but it definitely is a halacha. There's a reason that the rabbis wanted to start Shabbat with candlelight. There's a reason, okay? And if you start to think about what candlelight is, you'll come up with all sorts of messages. And I think we've mentioned this before, right? I mean, if you every aspect of a candle that you can think about will give you a message. For example, imagine this is a candle, right? And, this is the wick, this little springy on the top, okay? And above the wick is the flame, right? All of which creates the light, right? So any way you turn the candle, the flame is always going to be pointing up, right? You can't turn a candle sideways and have the flame point this way. The flame's always been pointing up. Why is that? So, I could give you the physics explanation. But on a mystical level, it's because the neshama is always striving to grow, to become better. And if you took a moment to think about that as you entered Shabbat and ask yourself why it's important to have that message, right? To have that message as you enter Shabbat, you would realize that that Shabbat is supposed to be this opportunity to allow us to grow, right? Symbols do that. So anger is problematic because it's cham, because it's heat, because it's fire. So we'll have to think about that later, okay? There is a person who is not just angry. It's not that you get angry. It's that you are angry. There's a difference between getting angry and being angry, right? You ever meet someone who just seems like an angry person? It's one thing you got a roommate and something really upset and all of a sudden he's really angry that morning. It's another thing when you have a guy in your room who's just always angry, right? So some people just have always angerness that they need to deal with. Okay, v'yesh adam shedato miyushevet alav. This is such a powerful phrase. There is a certain type of person whose dat is
Literally seated. What do you think that means?
Da'ato miyushevet.
What do you think that means?
Stays in one place. It doesn't grow.
Pardon?
It doesn't grow. It stays in one place.
You ever have that experience where, I don't know, I feel this most on Friday night. You know, get back from shul, and I don't know about you guys, but for me, Friday, I mean, I guess this year you're not experiencing that much because Friday is probably your most laid-back day, but when you re-enter the real world, you know, Friday's an intense day. And the more intense Friday is, the more relaxed Shabbos is. So for me, Friday is very intense, in a good way, you know. I get a lot done, have time with the kids, I catch up on email, you know, all these different stuff. And I'm always in that zone until, like, you know, 5 minutes before Shabbos. In my house, we always light candles together. A few of you have been by my house for Shabbos already. And, you know, Dorit lights candles with my daughters, and me and the boys are behind them. And it's just a moment that the family's together. And then we run off to shul, we come home, you know, there's like, you talk to the guests, you welcome whoever, and then shalom aleichem, and eshes chayil, and you make kiddush, there's a lot to do. Then you finish a motzi, and you sit down, and then finally, you're just seated.
Zula.
You have no one, Zula is a meal, that's a different country, right? You have nowhere to run to, you have nothing particular you have to do, you know? In fact, we were having a discussion, a few of us, about Shabbos and Yeshiva. And I think it was Sam and I was saying, like, you know, most Yeshivot, they have this goal. They have to create this intense, high spiritual experience, right? We've got to take them flying. We've got to get the candle lighting and the singing, you know? And I have a different attitude. And there's not a right or wrong. Different people have different energies. But I think the goal is, can you recreate the experience that you want Shabbos to be? For me, Friday night Shabbos is just that. It's like to sit and to relax and to enjoy. And sometimes we'll do more divrei Torah, and sometimes we'll do more singing, and sometimes we'll just schmooze. That's okay. There's not, you don't have to sing, you know, whatever you think. It's that I don't have to. God told me yushevik alav. There's certain people who are just, I don't know the English word for it. If somebody thinks of it, let me know. They're seated at the table. They're chilled. They're healthy. You know, they're grounded. Right? That's what this means. And da'ato, if you think about it, and I'm going to keep pointing this out to you. We talked about yesterday that da'at is all about relationships, right? So, da'ato miyushevet alav means he's just healthy relationship-oriented. You look at this guy, and all of his relationships, her relationships, seem to be in a healthy space. Ve'eino kois klal. He just never gets angry. Ve'im yichas, yichas kas me'at b'kama shanim. He'll get angry once in a while. Ve'yesh adam shu gavel lev biyoter. Then you have a guy who's very arrogant. There's something very ugly about arrogance. You know? And arrogance, pride, it carries an energy with it. You know? And you can smell it. You can sense it. You can feel it. You ever had the experience where someone walks into your presence? I don't know. It could be a teacher. It could be a rabbi. It could be a professor. It could be a friend at the table. It could be the guy behind the store. It doesn't matter. And you just somehow, you sense unhealthy energy. Have you ever had that experience? There's just something off. You know? Arrogance puts a person way out of balance. You know? Biyoter. Like very arrogant. V'yeshu shafel ruach biyoter. And then you have a guy who's very low. It doesn't say anav. Anav is humility. It doesn't say he's very humble. It says that he's very shafel ruach, low of spirit. Okay?
Right. From the fact that it's giving contrast, I'd say about the what you said is really chilled, and it's probably overly chill person who just like doesn't care. You like steal songs and he's like, oh, whatever.
Well, let me ask you a question.
Care more than
you're bringing this up a little earlier than I would have. I would have waited about 60 seconds, but since you brought it up, is he giving us opposites? Is the first piece negative and the second piece positive?
No,
is it that? One second. Look at this. The first piece is a person who's always angry. That's clearly a negative, right? Then you have the second piece, Datomi Yoshevet Alav. He seems to be in a good space, and he never gets angry. He gets angry once in a while every few years. That would seem to be positive. Agreed?
I think he's bringing it as a negative. He's bringing it as extremes, and he's going to say both extremes are bad.
Okay, so do you hear the question, though? You could make a case for saying what Moshe is saying. That's an extreme. It's not healthy, never get angry. Or you could make a case for saying, no, that's the goal. Now, if that's true, then that would mean that in the second instance, to be very shafel ruach would be the goal. But that strikes us as not so clear. So we're going to have to keep reading this halacha and see. Yeah, you want to say something, Rafi?
Yeah, you're saying
they're both like extreme. Like you don't want to like, think of yourself so lowly sometimes because you want like a middle ground.
Okay. Okay. We'll have to see that. That's going to be important.
Pure Diablos is it gives full examples of people who have tempers of various kinds. Gives them a guy who's quick to anger and slow to calm down is
right.
A Russia, and a man who's slow to anger and quick to calm down is a. Is a tzaddik. So it implies that you do at least it is possible to be angry and still be a tzaddik as long as you don't you have some control over your
right.
anger.
One of the interesting questions is going to be, since every character trait is something that came into the world, ultimately Hashem created all the character traits, there must be something good in anger. Of all the character traits, one of the challenges is whether you can come up with an instance where it's good, where it's healthy. You know, when is it good to be angry? I can think of a lot of examples where it's good to feign anger, to use anger, but to be angry. I was only in my whole life ever able to come up with one instance where I thought it was good to be angry. And the only reason it was good to be angry in that instance was because I wasn't on the level where I could do it without anger. You know what I mean?
What was this?
Well, for me, it was, you know, there are certain instances when you're in the army when we, you know, what's a good example? I think I once told you the story where we got ambushed, and you're basically at the bottom of a hill, and you're mekatzer tvachim, you've cut the distance between you and, in this case, the terrorists, to as close as you can get it. There's no cover left, right? And you now have to basically do a histarut. You have to charge up this hill, right? And that's a pretty scary thing to do. And how do you get over that? How do you stand up? How do you do that? You know? So one way to do that is anger. You take a moment to get so angry at those terrorists, to so consume yourself with anger that the audacity that they want to kill women and children, whatever it is that you put in your brain, and that fuels you up the hill. But it's still very problematic because even though you could make a case for saying that that's a positive use of anger, you pay a price for that. Because when it's over, a couple hours later, you've allowed yourself to become consumed by anger. There's a price for that. There's a reason, like, you know, in this case, it's a moment, and you think about it, and you get it out of your system. You know, davening helps a lot with that. But you know, there were Vietnam War vets that came out, you know, they did this every day for a year. And it screwed them up. So I'm not saying that there are never instances. I've never been able to come up with an instance where arrogance is good, but that doesn't mean it doesn't exist. But as a rule, it's something that would be most healthy left out of... Pardon?
Well, not necessarily arrogance, but somewhere between being arrogant and being really low on yourself.
We're going to get to that. That's the middle ground. I'm talking about the extreme. Can the extreme be good? But anyway, let's keep going. Right? V'yeshu shafel ruch b'tev. V'yeshu bal tava. Lo tizba nafsho me'aloch b'tava. This is interesting. The Rambam says that this is a character trait. There is a person who is a person of appetite. You know, there's a certain type of person who goes out to eat, and he has like a healthy portion. Then you get a guy who goes out to eat, and he needs to eat 4 burgers. He has huge appetites. And as you read further in the Rambam, you see the Rambam says, this isn't limited just to one appetite. This is a man of appetites. He'll do the same thing with other things. He doesn't just have healthy relationships. He's a nymphomaniac. He goes into stores. Everything he does that's physical, that's of appetites, he does to the extreme. Okay? And that's a character flaw that he needs to work on. And it's such an extreme in this case, right, that he's never satisfied. Long after everybody else is done, he's still trying to satisfy his appetite. Okay? And you can see it in a bar, right? There's a certain type of person who has a drink. And, you know, like that fellow said at the winery, you know, you pick up a glass of wine, you have it with your meal, and it you know, it adds something to the experience and elevates your soul. You can have that. Then you get a guy who goes out and he's got to drink down 3 bottles of wine. That's just a man of appetite. Something unhealthy about that, right? The issue balev tahor ma'od. Now, this is interesting. What's the other extreme from a person who's of healthy appetite? I would have thought it's a person who just doesn't have appetites at all. He just, you know, he's a bread and water man. But that's not what he says. He says that there is then a person who has a lev tahor ma'od, he has a very pure heart. Now that would seem to mean what?
Well, good to have one.
Pardon?
Well, just be like,
Well, yeah, it's clear that having that kind of appetite is not good.
No, you got pure.
Oh, you think so? I don't know. It's not good to have a lef tahor mode. No, I said it was a question.
Yeah,
this would seem to demonstrate.
He does not desire even the little the body needs. So if you don't want what your body actually needs, you're going to die.
No, you're depriving yourself.
The lo yit aveh, afil dvarim matim shaguf tzarich lehen. So then why does it call him a baal lef tahor mode? I would have think that it would call him a person of, you know, sort of no appetites.
Well,
of unhealthy lack of appetite. That's how it says.
Misinterpreted to have a positive connotation. Pure is not a negative nor positive. It means clean of appetites.
Well, what if
his heart is not burdened by desires for things?
It could be so removed from earthly desires that makes him so pure.
So is that good or bad?
Yeah.
It's a question, right? Do you hear the question?
It depends on the practical application therein.
That's definitely true.
Such that he actually doesn't eat and things are wasted away. There's definitely a
have the appetite for like Torah or like an aspect.
What's that saying? He's talking about physical appetites.
Yeah.
I know a guy. There was a guy. He was a mashgiach in Gush, and I never met anybody like this. He didn't have an ounce of fat on his body, but he wasn't anorexic, right? And it was clear that he had worked. Right, his name was Rav Uzi, and he was the mashgiach. He's a huge Talmud Chacham. It was clear that he had worked on his willpower, self-control, and appetites to an extreme degree, okay, in many different spheres. I wouldn't say that I was super close with him. There were other rebbeim that I related to more because I'm more of the chevraman type of guy. But there was something very, very intensely pure about this person. And every once in a while, he would do a sicha. He would have like you could go to his home or whatever, and he would give like a sicha to the younger guys, like a shmuz. And he would always have a glass of hot water. That's what he would drink. He would drink a glass of hot water. And I remember I noticed this eventually because it was in like one. It was a glass like this. It was just hot water, right? And I didn't even realize it was hot until, you know, he would sit there like this, you know, sort of with the hot water, right? You know, and he would, you know, it looked like he was gaining from the warmth of the water. So I once asked him about it. And he told me a very interesting thing, which I later actually heard from my father-in-law, who's a doctor, that drinking hot water, you know, not boiling hot, but drinking hot water is actually very good. It's especially very good before meals. Because it's like anything else, you know, think about it. If you have a dirty dish, what do? You wash it out with hot water. It becomes cleaner. So when you drink hot water, it goes through your system and it cleanses it. It cleans it out. It gets rid of the muck, right? Whatever. And he would use this to fill himself up. And he found that if he drank a large glass of hot water, he had less of an appetite. And he wanted to have less of an appetite. So I asked him, what's so bad about having a large appetite? He said, well, if I don't have a large appetite and I eat less, it means I'm eating what I need, as opposed to just following what I want. I thought about that for a long time. I have not yet reached that level. I'm not sure if I ever will, and I'm not sure if a person has to, but it definitely is a level. It was interesting to me, right? He is an extreme. What's interesting about the Rambam says here is that I agree with Moshe saying, it would seem to be that you can get to a point where you reduce your relationship with the physical so that you're not getting stuff that you need. And yet the Rambam says that the root of this is a lev tahor. He's a pure heart. That's not a bad thing. The other thing that's interesting about this is that the opposite of this, which is a man of appetites, what would that mean? That would mean that the opposite of this is that his lev is... Well, what's the opposite of tahor?
Tameh.
The opposite of tahor is tameh. He would have a lev tameh. There's something impure at the heart of this person. Now, by the way, just to put the pieces together, we talked in our kashrut class about what tumah is, remember? We said, what is tumah? What is impurity? Anybody remember?
A lack of purity.
Nope. It is a lack of purity, but what is tumah? Did we talk about this? I thought we talked about this. What we said, maybe I'm wrong, maybe I'm just imagining it. We were talking about kashrut, but it was a pretty long class, so maybe you zoned out. We were talking about kashrut, and we said that in order to understand what kashrut is, let's see what the Torah, you know, says kosher is. So, for example, the Torah says that when you eat from a kosher animal, right, it doesn't call it kosher. An animal in the Torah that's kosher is not called kosher, ever. It's called, and remember?
Tahor.
Tahor, Behemah
Torah.
We didn't discuss this? Oh, my apologies. Maybe that's for next week. So an animal which is kosher is called tahor. And an animal that's not kosher, by the way, is called tameh, Behemah Tameah. The opposite of a kosher animal is tameh. You don't eat tameh, you eat tahor. Right? So that means that we have to understand, if we want to understand, there's two ways to understand something. One way to understand something and understand what it is. Sometimes it's easier to figure out what something is by figuring out what it's not. Right? Like, sometimes you can figure out what light is by looking at light. Sometimes you can figure it out by looking at darkness. This is darkness. In darkness, there's no light. Helps you to understand what light is. Okay. So what is Tum'ah? By the way, although this we won't get to now, there are two things that are the opposite of Tum'ah. One is Tahor. What's the other thing that's the opposite of Tum'ah? That's right. The opposite of Tameh is Kadosh. When somebody is Tameh, the Torah says, V'lo yavo b'chol et ala kodesh. He can't come into Kedusha. Somebody who's Tameh can't come into the Beit HaMikdash. Can't come in contact, doesn't eat Truma. Can't come in contact with something as Kadosh, which is holy. Which is really interesting because we defined Kadosh. What is Kedusha? Didn't we talk about this? No? Right? What is Kadosh? Anybody remember what Rav Kook says?
Well, it could be like Kedusha.
Yeah. Okay, that's true, and that we will get to eventually. The Kedusha is, and Rashi says, when it says Kedoshim to you, and you shall be Kadosh, Rashi says, right, Hevu Prushim min Arayot, okay, be distant from, you know, so separating yourself. Rav Kook has a very simple, very, very simple definition for Kedusha. Rav Kook says that Kedusha is anything which is a vehicle for bringing Hashem into the world. Okay? Anything which is a vehicle for bringing Hashem into the world. You take this cup, right? And you use it for Kiddush, and you only use it for Kiddush. I have a cup in my office that was given to Israelite by an Israelite student, so we use it here for Kiddush. It's a beautiful silver cup. Sits in my office just so it doesn't get lost or stolen or whatever, right? Because people wander in here a lot. And we only use that for Kiddush and Avdallah. So now let's say one day I'm thirsty. Can I use that cup? Just have a drink. No. Some people say you don't, because that's a cup of Kedusha. What does it mean that how can a cup be Kadosh? Because that cup has become a vehicle for bringing Hashem into the world. That's how a person can become Kadosh. You can become a Kadosh person because you become more of a vehicle for bringing God into the world. Right? If you have a summer vacation and you're debating between, I don't know, going to Switzerland because you want to eat lots of sweet chocolate, or going to Darfur because you want to volunteer in a war-stricken zone and help human beings in another place in the world, if you go to Darfur and that's why you're going, your trip attains a level of Kedusha because you're becoming a vehicle for bringing Hashem into the world, right? That's what Kedusha is. So Tum'ah is the opposite of Kedusha because it's something that's a vehicle for distancing Hashem from the world. So, one second, right? So if Tum'ah, if Tameh is the opposite of things, what is Tameh? So one way of understanding Tameh, okay, is that Tum'ah, you know, a good example of this is a woman who's in Nida. Okay, woman's in Nida, Bokotov. Woman's in Nida, right? So if you look at translations, right? So what do they call a woman who's in Nida? She has her menstrual period. What is she? She's yeah, but what does that mean? I had it. You're reading an English translation, they use this word all the time. It bothers me. Unclean. She's unclean. That's what they say. Ugh, what a horrible way to define Tum'ah. That's not what Tum'ah is, unclean, right? I've met women who have a real issue with this, justifiably, like, I'm somehow unclean? Like, what does that mean, right? Tum'ah is contact with death. A woman's uterine wall breaks down, and that represents the fact that potential life was lost, right? You touch a dead animal, you've come in contact with death. The ultimate avi avota tum'ah is a dead body. Judaism says when you come into contact with death, you have to respect that. You have to give it its space, right? There are ultimately in this world, there are two parts to who we are, right? There is the part of me that has the capacity to be unlimited, to reach out to Hashem, you know? And then there's the part of me that is limited. It's an interesting question that the psychologists deal with. What makes me different from an animal? What makes me different from an animal? Think about it. I need to eat, just like animals need to eat. I need to sleep. I have drives, right? I'm a limited being. You can be the greatest saint in the world. You cannot go a week without sleep, and you cannot go a week without food. So, you're an animal. Yeah, but there are aspects to us that are different from the animal. You'll never find an animal, you know, when the hyena kind of goes down to the fire or the hunt, and the lion is finished with the best cut. So the hyena comes in and rips apart what's left. You'll never see that a hyena one day says, you know, I feel I need to grow. I need to think about myself. I'm going to fast today. Like, animals don't do that. Right? The human being has the capacity for unlimitedness. All those aspects of us that are not limited, that are not physical, the ability to give, to love, to share, those are the unlimited essences of who we are, the neshama. And we have the capacity to reach out to the ultimate source of unlimitedness, to Hashem. And yet we're reminded that we're just animals, and that's a very dangerous thing. Because if you're just an animal, then what's the point? Here today, gone tomorrow. The ultimate reminder that I'm an animal, the ultimate experience that carries with it the risk of making me think that there is no point, is death. And therefore, Judaism says, take that seriously. Take a step back. Right? Judaism doesn't say, you know, ignore death. Go out and party when someone dies and then just, you know, go back to work the next day. Judaism says, take a step off the ride. Sit shiva, focus on it. You're not supposed to learn Torah because it brings you simcha. Immerse yourself in it and then eventually come out of it. What's the end of the process of a person purifying themselves after contact with death? They jump into a mikvah. Because water represents life. Judaism says eventually you have to be willing to re-immerse yourself in life. So tumah is all about death. It's all about limits. Okay? So, and that relates a lot to kashrut, right? We don't eat the unkosher animal because somehow it brings animal energy into us, which limits us.
They say that,
right?
Tumah is lack. Like, just lacks the potential. Okay, so you can kill, like, a dead pig. You can feed it to people. You can...
No, it doesn't mean that there is
dead
no
body, a dead human body. You can bury it. I mean, that's a huge mitzvah. I mean,
no. For sure, it doesn't mean that there's no
lack of potential.
No. It doesn't mean that there's no potential for good in death. It doesn't mean that there's no potential for unlimitedness within the concept of death. It means that death itself carries a message, and we take that seriously.
Okay, what you're saying, behemoths to tomatoes.
Right.
So a horse is a behemoth, but you can use the horse to drive a carriage to mitzvah. So
absolutely, 100%.
So,
were you here for the kashrut class?
Yes.
Okay, so we talked about horses. We talked about the energy that a horse brings in and why that might be different. But I don't want to get into a discussion with Tuma, and I'm just trying to make a point on those details. But come me after class. So basically, right? If a person's appetites are somehow a lev tamei, it's an interesting question why the Rambam doesn't say that, but whatever. That may mean that those appetites are the more animal side, the more limited side of the human experience, right? Which is what I wanted to point out, right? So, okay, those are two extremes, right? V'yesh bal nefesh rechava, shalotish ban nafsho mikol mamon haolam, right? There's a person, it's an interesting question, why money is a very different character trait than the other appetites. Anybody want to suggest? He says there is a person who has a very broad soul. He wants more, right? And he will not be satisfied from all the money in the world, right? Kinyan shenemar ohev kesef lo yisba kesef. A person who loves money will never get enough money. You know, you look at this at the world, right? You know, this is the Bernie Madoff phenomenon. You have a guy who's a multi millionaire, who has more money than you and I probably will ever see in our lives, and he still wants more. It's not logical, right? I mean, there is a logic to it. Person can have such a drive. Why is the drive for money different than appetites? It's another appetite, no?
Let's say he has a broad soul.
Well, nefesh is, there are different terminologies that refer to a person. There is the Adam, there is the nefesh, there is ish, right? And ish is the highest level, nefesh is in the middle. Nefesh refers to the human being in his potential for growth, but he's not there yet. There is potential here. That's one way of looking at it. Yeah, Ellie?
Well, money's the only thing that we, that's actually man-made out of all the drives. We're the one that created it.
Oh, that's very interesting. That's very interesting. Well, since you mentioned that, we did point out the other day that there are three essential drives that human beings have, right? Remember that? We pointed out that there is the drive for sex, the drive for money, and the drive for acquisition. No, sorry. Food, sex, and acquisition. And when you read secular philosophers, they seem to suggest that food is a different drive than acquisition. For whatever the reason. This would seem to support that. We're not going to get into this right now. We will, but not right now. Right? Interesting. Okay. V'yeshu, right? V'yesh mekatzer nafsho shedayo afilu davar ma'at shelo yaspiklo velo yudof lasik kol tzecho. Then you have a person who needs so little, who wants so little, that he doesn't even try to get the minimum that he needs. He's happy to live out in the desert, right, with just a cup that he drinks rainwater from in the mornings and a salt pill in the afternoon. He doesn't need to shower. He doesn't need new clothes. right? He's as animal-like as you can imagine in his no, sorry, that's not true. He's distanced himself from the need for acquisition. He doesn't understand the person who needs a car. We need a car for a walk. It's healthy, right? And a person can reach an extreme. What the Rambam here is pointing out is that these are extremes. We're not yet nailed down on whether they're healthy, whether they can sometimes be healthy, whether they're never healthy, but they are the extremes. Okay? And the Rambam is taking the time to point out these character traits because these are the avi avot. All the other issues that we can have, they fit into this. If a person wants to take this seriously, you can make yourself a list. These are the extremes. It's a chart of 5-10 things. And anytime you have an issue that you're dealing with, you can look at that chart and figure out where does this fit in the spectrum. But we'll see that. Okay? So Yeshu misagef atzmo barav. There's a person who tortures himself with hunger, right? Zekovetz al yado. V'inochel pruta mishalo. Ele betzar gadol. There's a person, you would call this a miser. He'd rather be hungry and suffer than spend a penny on an extra, you know, lemon wafer. Right? That's an extreme. V'yishu me'abed kol mamono b'yado odato. And there's a person who throws away all his money. Now, that could be a good thing, a bad thing. Give it all to tzedakah. But is it a good thing? You know, some guy comes over to you and says, listen, I have no food. I really need help. And you know you got $100 in your wallet. And you're going to remember $2. So you do a mitzvah. You give him some tzedakah. And you have the standard, does he really need tzedakah? Is he going to go take it and buy a drink? But okay, you give him $2. But let's say the guy comes and says, listen, I have no place to live. I know. So you say, wow, I feel so bad. You come. And you give him the keys to your house. You say, you take my house. Take my car. Take my clothes. I'll start over again. So there's something off with that. That's not healthy. Right? It could be an extreme. And on these pathways, in other words, these principal character flaws, all other character flaws fit. Kagon mehulal ve'onein, to be overly elated, you know, you get a person who's just jokes around so much, right? He's a litzan. He's like, you can't take him seriously. He's never serious. You know, and a person who's an onan, who's so serious, it's almost depressing, right? V'keli v'shua, somebody whose keli is like someone who's so stingy, it's an extreme. You know, please don't use my book, because I've calculated that the average book can be opened 10,000 times before the binding weakens. I paid good money for this book. I really don't want you to use up 1/10,000th of the glue in my binding. And you just don't know quite to say to that, because that's so extreme, it's right? And then you get a person who's the opposite. He's so free-handed. You know, let's all go out for dinner, and one of the guys says, I'm buying everybody pizza, right? So, you know, if it happens once, it's cute. If it happens twice, it becomes like off. It's just, you don't want some guy buying you pizza all the time, right? Hope, I don't know. The achzari v'rachman, somebody who's cruel to an extreme, you know? Like, look, there's a cat in the dorm, and he grabs the cat's head and twists it off.
Sounds like someone right? in the
tibari. Okay? Huh? I don't want to go there. There's so many surim that you might violate continuing that sentence that I don't want to go. Chas v'shalom, right? Chas v'shalom, right? Chas v'shalom is a place of Torah, whatever, right? So, right? But you could have a person who's, you know, it's one thing if there's a fly, right? And it's flying around and it's annoying you and you slam it. Okay. It's another thing if you catch it, you say, watch this, and you start picking out its legs and you can see it's right. There's just something off with that, right? But a person could also be, you know, sort of a Rahman to such a degree that it's problematic. There were Hasidic rabbis who aspired to this, but not forever, right? Imagine if you walk into the Beis Medrash one day, you say, listen, can I ask everybody not to move? So you look up and you're like, huh? I noticed that there are some ants here. And I think if we move, we might kill them. So I'm going to look for them. And he spends his whole day looking for the ants to save ants' lives.
We have them in the dorm.
No, I don't mean the ants. I mean the person who spends his day looking for ants. Like, you can get to an extreme of rachmanut. Right? Okay? V'rachle vav v'amitzlev. And a person can be so soft-hearted, right? You know, that it's an extreme. There was a movie, Saving Private Ryan. And there's a horrendous scene in that movie. Did you see that movie?
Yeah.
Okay. There's a horrendous scene in that movie where a U.S. soldier is hand-to-hand combat, is struggling with a Nazi, with an SS officer or German Wehrmacht or whatever it is, and back and forth, and finally the German seems to overcome him, and the U.S. soldier realizes that he's about to die, and he's begging for his life, and you kind of sense that the German is going to kill him, wants to kill him, but doesn't enjoy the killing, right? And he gradually, do you remember the scene? And there's a fellow on the stairway who has a gun, who could save his comrade's life, but is so overcome by fear, etc. He's a man of soft of heart. He's the type of individual that maybe wouldn't and shouldn't have been in the army.
The translator,
whoever it is, right? And it's a heartbreaking scene, right? Rachmanut can reach an extreme, and then you have a person who's so amitz lev. This isn't brave. This is rash. You know, we had a couple of guys like that when I was in the army. They did things that were ridiculous. They were unhealthy. You know, just you know, run into rooms and do what you have to do and not taking care because machbatli, I don't mind dying. People around, people like that get killed. You know, and it was an interesting educational experience for me to be able to recognize such a person and figure out how to point out to them because all the guys idolized these guys, but it wasn't healthy. Right? These are the extremes. And then we get to the crux of the Rambam. The crux of the Rambam is going to be the halacha ben. Okay? What do you do with this? So as we're going to see, there are two processes. The first process is you have to recognize the extremes and you have to figure out where you are. And then you have to ask yourself, where do you want to be? If you think about it, you don't want to really be at either extreme. You want to be somewhere in the middle. And as you'll see, the Rambam now is going to start setting up the paradigm of how I get there. Okay? So, as usual, we've run to the limit of our time, 9:45. So, take a couple minutes. We'll start morning today in a few minutes. And, Boker Tov. Every time I think we're going to get to the meat, I look at the clock. It's terrible. Yeah. Yeah.